You know that old engineering saying, strong, cheap, lightweight, pick two.
Yeah.
That's a classic problem.
Oh, yeah.
But in material science, there's another one, an even more fundamental trade-off that people have been, you know, banging their heads against for centuries.
Hardness versus toughness.
Hardness versus toughness.
It's the classic dilemma. It's like the first thing they teach you, if you make something incredibly hard, say a diamond or a ceramic plate, it gets brittle.
Right.
You hit it with a hammer, it doesn't dent, it just shatters.
And on the other hand, if you make something tough, something that could absorb a lot of energy, like a rubber tire.
Right.
Well, it's soft. A bullet would go right through it.
Exactly. So you always have to compromise. You find some middle ground where it's, you know, kind of hard and kind of tough, but it's never really great at both.
But what if you didn't have to choose? What if you could sort of cheat the system?
Mm-hmm.
Today, we are diving into a stack of research that feels a little bit like alchemy, but it's actually some really high-tech metallurgy. We're looking at a PhD thesis called Mechanical Property Modeling of Steels by Asil Abdulbaki Alhamdani.
This is a really fascinating piece of work. It's a collaboration between the University of Technology in Baghdad and the University of Cambridge, and it tackles that exact paradox.
It does. And it uses a material called superbainite.
Superbainite. It's a great name.
It sounds like something from a comic book.
It basically is. It's a nanostructured steel that's used in, you know, modern armor plating. But the research isn't just about cooking up new metals.
No, and this is where our deep dive gets really interesting. It's about how we design these materials. Because instead of melting and testing, I don't know, a million different recipes.
Which would take forever.
Right. Instead of doing that, this researcher used artificial intelligence.
Specifically, something called Bayesian neural networks.
Which sounds incredibly complicated, but we're going to break it down. So our mission today is kind of twofold. First, we have to understand what makes superbainite so special.
The nuts and bolts of the metal itself.
And second, we're going to see how a committee of AI models can predict the, well, the almost unpredictable behavior of steel.
And believe me, steel is way more unpredictable than most people think.
So let's start with the star of the show,
mm.
The material. I think most people, myself included, just assume steel is
mm-hmm.
steel,
mm-hmm.
you know, iron and carbon.
Yeah, you melt it, you pour it, you're done.
Right.
If only it were that easy. Steel is actually a shapeshifter. It's polymorphic.
Yeah.
The atoms can arrange themselves in totally different crystal patterns depending on the temperature.
The thesis gets into this with the time temperature transformation diagram, the TTT diagram.
Right. Think of the TTT diagram as a kind of recipe book for the steel. When you heat steel up, say, to 1,000 degrees Celsius, it becomes a phase called austenite.
Okay.
The crystals are all open, the carbon's dissolved nicely. All the magic happens when you cool it down.
And how fast you cool it changes what you get at the end.
Precisely. If you cool it really slowly, the atoms have tons of time to just wander around. That's called diffusion. And they form soft stuff like perlite.
But if you quench it, like dump it in cold water.
Then you freeze the atoms in place. They get trapped. And you create this really stressed, hard, but super brittle structure called martensite.
Okay, so perlite is too soft. Martensite is too brittle. So where does bainite sit in?
Bainite is the Goldilocks zone. It forms in that middle ground, usually between, say, 200 and 550 degrees Celsius. But what makes it so unique is how the atoms move.
Right. The thesis makes this really important distinction.
Mm-hmm.
It's not diffusional. It's displacive.
Yes. And the best analogy I've heard for this is a military one.
I read that part.
Okay. So in a diffusional change, like slow pooling, imagine a crowd leaving a concert. Everyone just sort of wanders randomly to find their car. It's messy.
It's slow. That's diffusion.
That's diffusion. Now, bainite is displacive. This happens at lower temperatures where the iron atoms don't really have the energy to wander around. So instead, they move in a coordinated shear.
Like a drill team.
Exactly like a drill team on a parade ground. A sergeant barks an order and the entire line of soldiers takes one synchronized step to the side.
So it's a disciplined collective snap into a new formation.
Exactly. And because of that, you get this very specific microstructure. You end up with these incredibly thin plates of ferrite, which is almost pure iron, separated by tiny slivers of austenite.
Okay, so that's normal bainite. But we're talking about superbainite. Is that just a marketing name or is it actually different?
Oh, it's legitimately different. And it all comes down to the scale. In standard bainite, those plates are microscopic. Hmm. In superbainite, they're nanoscopic.
We're talking plates that are just 20 to 30 nanometers thick.
Yeah.
That is just unbelievably fine. A human hair is, what, 80,000 nanometers wide?
So we're talking about structures that are thousands of times thinner than a single hair. And in material science, the general rule is the finer the structure, the stronger the material.
Why is that?
Well, metal bends when tiny defects in the crystal, they're called dislocations, move around. If you create billions and billions of tiny boundaries every 20 nanometers, those dislocations basically have nowhere to go. They get pinned.
They get stuck.
They get stuck. And if the defects can't move, the metal can't bend. It just stays rigid.
The numbers in the thesis are pretty mind-blowing. It lists an ultimate tensile strength of 2,500 megapascals.
Which is just astronomical.
Put that in context for us.
Okay, so the steel holding up a skyscraper, a big bridge, that's usually around 400, maybe 500 MPPAs. So this stuff is 5 or 6 times stronger than structural steel.
Wow.
And it has a hardness around 600 or 700 Vickers. But here's the trick. Here's the cheat we talked about. Normally, steel that hard would shatter. Super bainite retains its ductility. It can take a punch.
How does it do that? What's the secret sauce?
It's the recipe. You need high carbon for the hardness, obviously. But the real unsung hero here, the MVP of this whole thing, is silicon.
Silicon.
Yep. The thesis describes silicon's role in a way that reminds me of like a bouncer at a nightclub.
A bouncer. Okay, I like it. Unpack that.
So in high carbon steel, the carbon really wants to precipitate out. It wants to form this stuff called cementite. Now, cementite is a carbide. It's super hard, but it's brittle. It's basically a ceramic.
So cementite is the troublemaker you want to keep out.
It's the troublemaker. If you get big chunks of it, that's where cracks start. Now, silicon has this unique property. It hates cementite. It has almost no solubility in it. So when the steel is transforming, the silicon effectively stands at the door and says, nope, you're not forming.
It blocks it.
It blocks the brittle cementite from ever forming.
So where does all that extra carbon go then?
It gets trapped. It gets pushed into those tiny little slivers of austenite between the ferrite plates. This creates these carbon-enriched austenite films. And those films are soft and ductile.
So you have these unbelievably hard nanoscale plates of iron, and they're cushioned by soft, ductile films of austenite.
Exactly. It's a natural composite material. So when a crack tries to run through the armor, it hits one of those soft austenite films and it just stops dead.
Yeah.
That's how you get hardness and toughness together.
That is brilliant. And the application is obviously armor. But the source mentions a huge manufacturing benefit too, right? Something about the cooling process.
Oh, a huge benefit. Normally, to get really hard steel, you have to quench it. Dunk it in oil or water to cool it instantly.
Right.
And for a small knife, that's fine. But if you're making, you know, a massive tank hull, that rapid cooling causes thermal shock. The metal warps, or even worse, it cracks under its own stress.
Because the outside cools way faster than the inside.
Exactly. But super bainite, because of the chemistry, you can cool it slowly. You can stick a huge piece in an oven at 200 degrees and just let it bake for a couple of days. No shock, no warping.
It sounds like a perfect material. But obviously, it can't be that easy to get right. Otherwise, we wouldn't need a whole PhD thesis on it.
Well, no. And this is where we run into what the thesis calls the complexity trap.
The complexity trap.
We know the basic recipe, high carbon, high silicon. But what if you add a bit of manganese? What if you change the baking temperature by just 10 degrees? Or bake it for 24 hours instead of 48?
It becomes this multivariate mess.
Totally. The final properties depend on the chemistry, the heat treatment, the microstructure, and everything is connected. You change one tiny thing and it throws everything else off.
The thesis is really clear that traditional math, like linear regression, just completely fails here.
It fails hard. Linear regression is great for straight line relationships. You know, add more sugar, cake gets sweeter. But steel isn't linear at all. Sometimes more carbon makes it harder, but add too much, and it actually makes it softer.
It's all curves and tipping points.
Full of them. So if simple math can't do it, Al Hamdani turned to the big guns. Artificial intelligence, specifically a Bayesian neural network.
Now, we hear AI all the time, but this approach seemed really specific. They didn't just build one brain to solve the problem.
No, they use what's called a committee of models.
A committee. I love that idea. It sounds like you have a whole room of digital metallurgists all arguing with each other.
That's honestly a pretty good way to think about it. See, when you train one neural network, you start with random settings. So one model might end up a bit biased in one direction, another might be biased in a different way.
So no single model is ever perfect.
Right. So instead of trusting just one, the researcher trains a whole committee of them, dozens of them. Then for any prediction, you just take the average of what all the best models think. It cancels out the individual errors.
And this leads to my favorite part of the methodology section, the difference between noise and uncertainty.
Yes, this is so important. In normal conversation, we use those words to mean the same thing. But in Bayesian statistics, they're total opposites.
Okay, so walk us through it.
All right. Noise is about the data you're feeding it. Let's say you're measuring hardness, but your machine is a little wobbly. You're going to get slightly different numbers each time. That's noise. It's just messy data.
Okay. And uncertainty.
Uncertainty is a gap in knowledge. It's the model saying, I have never seen anything like this before.
So noise is, I can't hear you clearly. And uncertainty is, I just don't know the answer.
Perfect analogy. And this is why the Bayesian approach is so powerful. It actually puts a number on that uncertainty. If you ask it to predict a steel recipe it's seen 1,000 times, the error bar is tiny. It's confident.
But if you ask it about something totally new?
If you ask it, hey, what if I add 50% nickel to this? The model won't just make up a number. It'll give you a prediction, right, but it will attach a huge error bar to it. It's essentially saying, look, I'm just guessing here, so please don't build a bridge with this information.
Which, for engineering, is a massive safety feature. You want the machine to tell you when it doesn't know. So let's see how this committee actually did. They tested it on 3 big things. Hardness, the amount of bainite that forms, and then the really tricky one, fracture toughness. Let's start with hardness.
Right. So they gathered a bunch of published data, but they also did their own experiments with a machine that has a great name, the Thermic Master Z.
The Thermic Master Z. That sounds like a robot from a Godzilla movie.
It's a very cool piece of gear. It's a simulator that heats up a tiny sample of steel and then uses lasers to measure its diameter in real time.
Why measure the diameter?
Because when the crystal structure changes, when those atoms do that military shift, the volume of the steel actually expands.
Oh, wow.
The laser sees the sample get a tiny bit fatter, and that tells the scientists exactly when the transformation is happening.
That's brilliant. So using all this data, what did the AI committee find out about hardness? Any surprises?
It confirmed a lot, but with some really important nuance. First, carbon is king. Hardness shoots up as you add more carbon. But, and the AI saw this clearly, it peaks at around 0.6 weight percent.
So if you go past 0.6%, you don't get any harder.
You actually start getting softer.
Why would that happen?
Because with too much carbon, you overstabilize the austenite phase. You end up with these big, soft chunks of leftover austenite that never transform into the hard bainite plates.
Ah, okay. The AI saw that tipping point. What about temperature?
This totally confirmed the whole super bainite theory. The model found a direct linear relationship. The lower the transformation temperature, the higher the hardness.
So cooking it at 200 degrees gives you the finest plates and the hardest steel.
Exactly.
And what about silicon, our bouncer?
This was the really interesting trade-off. The AI found that silicon on its own actually decreases hardness a little bit. It has a negative weight in the model.
Wait, I thought silicon was the MVP.
It is, for toughness. But if you're only looking at pure hardness, it's a slight penalty. The model showed that you're accepting a small dip in hardness to get the massive benefit of stopping those brittle carbides.
That's a calculated trade-off.
A trade-off the AI could actually quantify.
So hardness, pretty much solved. The committee nailed it. Then they looked at volume fraction, basically asking how much of this steel actually becomes bainite.
And this got a little circular. The model found that the single best predictor for how much bainite you have is the hardness.
Hold on. Hardness depends on the amount of bainite. But you predict the amount of bainite by knowing the hardness. It feels like a loop.
It is a bit of a chicken and egg thing. But in practice, for a metallurgist, it's actually useful. It helps you find the processing window. The AI acts like a GPS telling you there's a sweet spot in time where you've made the most bainite you can.
Okay, so hardness is solvable, volume is solvable. But now we get to the final boss battle of this whole thesis, fracture toughness.
Mm-hmm.
Plain strain fracture toughness. This is the big one.
Right.
Yield strength tells you when metal bends. Hardness tells you if it dents. Toughness tells you when it snaps.
This is the real safety factor. This is what keeps the people inside the armor alive. Absolutely. And the researcher tried 3 different models to predict this. And honestly, the results are kind of scary if you're someone who just blindly trusts a spec sheet.
Okay, walk us through them. First, a mechanical properties model.
Right. They just fed the AI the basic numbers, yield stress, ultimate tensile strength, elongation, and they asked, okay, computer, this steel is really strong, so how tough is it?
And you'd think strong steel would be tough steel.
You'd think so. And the model failed completely. High uncertainty, terrible predictions.
It failed. So you can't predict how tough something is just by knowing how strong it is.
Nope. And that's a really dangerous assumption that gets made all the time. You can have a steel with a massive yield strength that's as brittle as a potato chip. The two don't correlate well at all.
Wow. Okay, so plan B, they tried a chemical composition model, just the recipe.
Also failed, because you can have the exact same ingredients, but if you cook them at different temperatures, the toughness can be all over the place.
So the recipe isn't enough, and the strength isn't enough.
They had to build a combined model. They had to feed the AI everything. The chemistry, the full heat treatment history, and the mechanical properties. Only then did the model even start to make decent predictions.
Why is toughness so much harder to predict? Why is it the final boss?
It comes down to something called the weakest link theory.
The weakest link.
Think about it. Hardness is a bulk property. It's the average strength of billions of atomic bonds. If the average is high, the metal is hard. Pretty easy to predict.
But toughness?
Toughness isn't an average. It's determined by the single worst flaw in the entire material. A microscopic bit of dirt, a tiny gas bubble, one grain boundary that didn't form right.
So you could have a near perfect piece of steel, but one single speck of dust completely ruins its toughness.
Exactly. And the AI struggles with that because our data sets don't list one speck of dust at coordinate X, Y, Z. That weakest link is invisible to the model right up until the moment it breaks.
That's a pretty profound insight. It means there's a real limit to how much we can actually model reality.
It does, and it brings us right back to why superbainite is so special in the first place.
How so?
Because since we can't predict every tiny flaw, we have to design a microstructure that's tolerant of them. By using that high silicon and low temperature, you're engineering a material that is naturally resistant to cracks.
So even if there is a flaw, the material itself is designed to handle it.
Exactly. That soft, carbon-enriched austenite film is there to catch the crack and stop it. You stop relying on achieving perfection, and you start relying on resilience.
That's a great way to put it. So pulling it all together, what are the big takeaways from El Hamdani's research?
I'd say there are three big ones. First, superbainite itself is a marvel. It shows you don't have to quench steel to make it hard. It's a nanostructured armor you can bake slowly, which is a huge deal for manufacturing.
And the second takeaway?
The tool matters. These AI committees let us weigh all the ingredients and see the trade-offs. They let us see that, you know, silicon hurts hardness a bit, but is essential for toughness.
And it lets us separate the noise from real uncertainty.
Right. It gives engineers the safety net. But the final lesson is a pretty humble one.
The final boss is still standing.
It is. We can predict hardness really well. But predicting exactly when a piece of armor will crack under pressure, that's still incredibly elusive.
It really makes you think. We rely on safety standards every single day in our cars, bridges, buildings.
We do. And if this research shows that something as basic as yield strength is a terrible predictor of fracture toughness, you just have to ask.
How many of our current safety standards are relying on those simple and maybe wrong correlations?
And what might we be missing because of it?
It's a sobering thought.
A little terrifying.
A slightly terrifying thought to end on, but a very necessary one.
Hmm.
That's all for this deep dive into the world of superbainite and the digital brains trying to figure it out. Thanks for listening.
Stay curious.